Welcome to Courageous Leadership with Travis Yates, where leaders find the insights, advice, and encouragement they need to lead courageously.
Welcome back to the show. I'm so honored that you are going to spend a few minutes with me here today. And I just had a fantastic time in Arlington, Texas at the Texas Association of Hostage Negotiators Conference. I launched a new keynote at that conference called The Legacy of Greatness. And it's always a little bit nerve-wracking to sort of launch something for the first time in front of 400 people. Most of them had not seen me before, but man, it was a closing keynote. It was phenomenal. I was extremely encouraged. I kind of came home on a high, and then the day I see this. Once again, I've been saying this for years, the Department of Justice is trying to destroy local law enforcement. With that said, the IACP is meeting this week in San Diego with a lot of chiefs, a lot of leaders in our law enforcement that is in bed with the same group, the DOJ, trying to destroy law enforcement. I have talked ad nauseum about what they're doing with consent decrees. I don't want to keep repeating that, but it's so over-the-top destructive in these cities. It's hard to not talk about it, and I have to wonder why I'm the only one talking about it. I mean, this is crazy. If you'd have told me that, hey, when New Orleans signed their consent decree, a decade later, their violent crime went up 100%. No one in their right mind would want to sign a consent decree, but we have cities almost begging for these things. We have chiefs that are living off these things. We certainly have court monitors making millions off these things. And it is corruption at its finest. I don't know if it's criminal corruption, but it is certainly Big Brother corruption. And I just can't even take it hardly. And in fact, I want to leave you over to a website that for the first time in my knowledge, some very courageous men and women, I assume in the city of Phoenix, have put this site together called savephx.com. Savephx.com. I'll put that in a link below this. And they have collected tons of research and articles on consent decrees. I have agreed to give them my content because I've written a lot of content. I know Bob Scales has agreed to give them a lot of content because a lot of his content's on there. But you can go to that website and go to categories. You'll see every article I've ever written about consent decrees. In fact, a podcast is on there that I've done here on them. But they have pulled news articles. I mean, if yours a question on whether a consent decree is good for communities and good for law enforcement, go to that website. It is damning. It is just absolutely damning. So the fact that we still are dealing with this through the DOJ drives me crazy. But just to prove what I'm saying is correct, just today the DOJ released a document called Recruitment and Retention for the Modern Law Enforcement Agency. Recruitment and Retention for the Law Enforcement Agency. I will put the link below. But it is their attempt to help with the recruiting issues going on nationwide in law enforcement. It's kind of hilarious that the very thing the DOJ has hurt, which is retention, that's one of the things that consent decrees do, and you can see the comparison cities over there at that website to where every city that's put a consent decree in, people have left agencies en masse. Budgets are up, and retention is down, and nobody wants to work at an agency ran by a DOJ court monitor, of course. But so it's kind of hilarious that they put this document out. And what they did is they had a meeting back in April in Washington, D.C., and they invited, you know, people from the community. They invited major law enforcement agencies. I know people that went to this, and they said, give us your takes on how we can help recruiting. Now, if it would have been an attempt to actually help with recruiting, I would be praising them because there are ways we can actually recruit. And I'm going to get to that a little bit later. But let me just give you the quick tidbit on this document, just to prove to you, the DOJ's actual mission is to destroy law enforcement, destroy community safety. So in the end, the federal government can then say, see, we need to have some sort of national focus on policing because the local agencies cannot do this. I'm not making that up. Art Acevedo, now with Aurora, another guy that jumps from department to department with the DOJ involvement because they're under consent decree right now, he has actually said, as a board member of IACP a few years ago, he actually said there are too many law enforcement agencies out there. We need to scale this down. Yeah, funny for you to say that. And we've had politicians talking about a national police force. So this is in the back of their mind. We had the head of the DOJ civil rights talking about reimagining police to where we don't need as many police. So this is all in the works, and our own leaders are behind this. I want to come to you on these podcasts and give you positive things. Things can help you immediately in leadership. But I cannot get past talking about those trying to destroy us and the fact that our own leaders are silent and sometimes participating in this chaos. Here is some quick clips on this document. Are you ready for this? Merrick Garland, our Attorney General, starts off by setting you up. And this is what he says. Policing is a noble profession, and we are committed to doing everything we can to support local police departments as they work to serve their communities, build public trust, and keep people safe. Notice he mentions keep people safe last. That's been my big take here. Why is anything trumping keeping people safe? That is the priority. That is the mission. But hey, he said it. So he sort of gives us this, yeah, we all agree with that. But then you have to read into the document to see what they mean by that. They want to modernize eligibility requirements for new recruits. They want to lower standards with room for redemption. So there, this DOJ document that our own police leaders have gotten behind, they participate in this meeting, their big take is we want to lower standards. With the quote, with room for redemption. Folks, that right there you can stop. Anybody that tells you that to solve the recruiting problem, you just need to lower the standards, that tells you exactly what they're trying to do. Because once you lower the standards, you then have problems inside that police department for decades to come, meaning the federal government can keep talking about, we're here to help you and save you, and we're going to do this and we're going to do that. It is absolutely insane. They want to, ready for this? This is a quote from the document, a national standard for police hiring. Well, their standard, they're already recommending, is to lower the standards. So you know what a national standard would take. They're trying to take that out of the hands of local communities that want to dictate what their departments are doing. They want to stop considering financial history and credit for new recruits. Now, this has been a big take from those that want to see more diversity in recruiting. Now, this blows my mind because what are you saying? Are you saying that minorities don't have good credit compared to others? I don't even know what that means. Folks, this is not about diversity. Law enforcement in the last 20 years has excelled in diversity. When I started law enforcement 3 decades ago, that was a big deal. And there was a lack of diversity in law enforcement. And departments worked very hard within the guidelines without lowering standards, and we built our ranks. More females, more minority. I mean, you have, I believe, 40% of LAPD is minority. New York City is similar, if not higher. And so these departments have really, really improved on diversity. I think that is a good thing. I've always said that. I think our departments should try to mirror the community as best as we can without lowering standards. But this, to me, is incredible. And there's some misnomer about, well, why are you looking at credit history before you become a police officer? Folks, we can't at the same point talk about we want our police officers to be the best and the brightest and the best in our community, but we're going to ignore things that dictate what type of people they are. Work history and credit history is important because the only way you predict the future of any individual is the past, okay? So if someone has a problem with credit history, well, you give them time to fix their credit history and then you can hire them. Everyone knows that. But credit history is not a forever thing. If you default on credit 5, 6, 7 years ago, That's not a problem now. So people that are having credit history issues applying to be police officers, those are typically recent issues. Now, there's always a caveat for that, right? Is it credit card default where you can't pay a minimum monthly payment, or is it a medical bill, which is completely different, right? Most bankruptcies come from medical bills. So I think there's always been sort of a push and a give with that. But just to say we want to stop looking at that as a general rule is insane. It's absolutely insane. Of course, you know what's coming next. You know what's coming next. Here it goes. We want to adapt physical fitness scores. And we want to assess the needs for spelling tests and examinations. I mean, this is crazy, right? This is just crazy. We want to adjust educational requirements, which means we want to lower educational requirements. Let's not act like we have high educational requirements now. There's a few departments, I can list them on one hand, that has a bachelor's degree requirement. And there's a lot of departments that have an associate's degree requirement. And there's the vast majority of departments have a GED requirement. But they say, oh, we need to lower education requirements for that. And we want to call this a profession. Remember, Garland says it's a noble profession. Well, what's the definition of profession? You have some sort of requirements, right? This is just insane. They also want to, of course, relax grooming requirements. Because God forbid we have police officers that look nice, neat, and clean, and you name it. And we want to make adjustments to drug use standards. Now, the interesting thing is we've already oftentimes made adjustments to drug use standards. You know, marijuana use has become much more mainstream than it was decades ago. So if somebody comes in now at most departments and say, hey, I used marijuana in college, that's generally not used against them, right? There was a time when any marijuana, when I came on, any marijuana use, any drug use whatsoever, you're not getting hired. And by the way, I think we hired pretty good people back then. So I don't think that was a bad thing. But I understand the context changes. And when marijuana becomes legal in states, it's kind of hard to keep that against people. But what are they saying here? I think it's vague on purpose. So these standards have generally been lowered in local agencies anyway. The DOJ is saying you need to lower them more. But here is the caveat. There is one thing that the DOJ does not want to lower, and listen to the quote. Unanimously agreed that any potential candidate with a history of the following should be ineligible. Any form of extremism or demonstrated prejudice or bigotry, including in dress, jewelry, or tattoos. Now, nobody wants to hire anybody with a history of bigotry. Okay, that's never been the case. We don't want to hire anyone like that. But it strikes me, the vague term extremism, what does that mean? Because the last time I checked, the FBI under the DOJ says MAGA Republicans are extreme. It says that parents going to school board meetings saying they don't want their kids indoctrinated in certain areas are extreme. These are documents from the FBI. So that generic statement is pretty ironic to me. So you're going to need to define to me what bigotry and prejudice is. I think we all know what that is. No one's hiring anyone that has expressed, you know, complete racist views and bigotry views. But what's extremism mean? Because does it mean, what if you're a Republican? Sorry about that. I've been battling some allergies. What if you're a Republican? What if you voted for the wrong person? I mean, that's pretty dangerous stuff. But I think before you got to that point, you should have already seen what's going on here. You have your own Department of Justice that are telling local agencies, lower your standards. And now, why is this important? Because you're going to say, well, that's just the DOJ, Travis. Departments don't have to follow this. Well, the DOJ is able to continually to push consent decrees that nobody has to do. It's all voluntary. But they do it under the threat of grants. If you don't follow our standards, you don't get our grants. And there are grants coming out now from the DOJ that says if you don't follow our use of force standards, which are crazy, it's completely outside the bounds of Graham v. Conner. If you don't follow our standards here, you don't get this money. If you don't agree to all this crazy stuff with the consent decree, you don't get our grant money. And I can see them saying, because there's lots of grant money going around to departments on recruiting and retention, if you don't follow our guidelines, you don't get this grant money. This is what they use to push this on local agencies. And local agencies, unfortunately, are tied to this money. And I would tell every agency listening to this, get away from the DOJ and their grants. You don't need them. First off, if you can sign a consent decree, you're at $25 million a year, easy. You know, that's easy, first few years. what are you getting? $500,000, $1 million from the DOJ a year? At best, that's the large departments. I think my department would get $250,000 a year or something like that, right? I mean, so large, maybe you're getting $1 million or $2 million. I don't know, but it's not worth it. But it's certainly not worth it to completely ruin your police department. I wish the DOJ would have actually given us tips on recruiting, because that's important. Recruiting is suffering for a number of reasons, but one of the largest reasons it's suffering is exactly what the DOJ is doing to local law enforcement. People don't want to work for agencies that are beholden to the federal government because they are so asinine in what they're saying. They're creating dangerous environments. They're creating dangerous places to work. They're creating dangerous communities. A study just came out today that in Democrat counties, violence, homicides are up, are 60% higher than non-Democrat counties. And I don't want to get into politics here, but typically those are the counties that are signing up with DOJ type programs. And so it creates a more dangerous environment. It creates a much more difficult place to work. So they are hurting that. But there are things we can do in recruiting. I had an agency reach out to me over the weekend. Pretty large agency in the South. And they said, Travis, we've done everything. We've updated our website. We've put billboards out. We're going to job fairs. We're going to military. We're putting all these Facebook posts out. We're about to go bankrupt. Like, there are departments that are literally close to like having a closed shop. Sheriff's departments have to come in and run them, right? Because the recruiting is suffering. And the problem they're having is they still have a old mindset on recruiting. And the DOJ could have talked about this, but they didn't, because they're not really in the interest of helping you recruit. They're in the interest of destroying you. You need to get past this idea that they're here to help you. It's crazy to me that nobody's talking about this but me. And what we need to do is we need to focus on what actual recruiting is. Recruiting is not putting out a Facebook ad and hoping they come to you. Recruiting is not putting a billboard out hoping they come to you. Recruiting is going out and finding people and getting them to apply. Like, you go find them, not them finding you. It's completely backwards. See, because for years, we've never had to recruit. We marketed is what we did. We tried to make our department look good through whatever, all these different areas, and because we had an overabundance of recruits. You know, I call it the 80-20 rule today. There's about 80%, you could do nothing today and you're going to get about 80% of your positions filled, because there's just that many people that have a calling to do this job. But the difference is when I came on 30 years ago, it was like 200%. We turned qualified candidates away because there were an overabundance of candidates. Well, some of that's a generational shift. Some of that's this defund police nonsense. Some of this is the DOJ, but you only have about 80% of the people that really want to be in law enforcement. You have to go out and find the other 20%. We've never had to do that until the last few years. And we have not shifted our mindset on recruiting from they'll find us to we have to go find them. And to do that, you need to actually recruit, not market. Marketing gets your 80% there. It makes your department look better than another department. Okay? That's what it means. But to get the other 20%, and that's in a lot of departments, you have to go out and find them. Very few people are doing that. So I had this department reach out to me. They're just like, we don't know what to do. And I go, hey, I can solve it, because I know this one recruiting company. And I'm just telling you, because they're the only ones I know doing it well. It's called Safeguard Recruiting, safeguardrecruiting.com. Like, I know the guy that owns it. He's a former police officer. He was in the trucking industry for a long time doing recruiting. Just killed it there. I convinced him to go move over to law enforcement, and their model works. Literally between $30 and $50 ORI, meaning for every $30 to $50 you spend, you get a qualified candidate. Like, it's just crazy to me. Like, he's got case studies on the website where a department gave him $1,000. He gave him 200 recruits. It's insane what they're doing, because they have the knowledge and skills to go. They're basically headhunters for law enforcement. That's where we're missing it. Your recruiting officer probably isn't an expert in headhunting, right? They're probably not an expert in recruiting. They're probably good at Facebook posts, you know, working candidates, background checks, things like that, going to job fairs. That's not recruiting. People that go to job fairs already know they want to be a police officer. People that are hitting your website already know they want to be a police officer. You need to go out and find them. So I told the guy, I go, if you're really serious about it, call up my buddy. Call him up. He will get you all the candidates you need, if you're serious. But what I'm finding is most people, it's hard for them to get there, because for them to get there, they have to first admit that they didn't know it in the first place. Man, sorry, I'm coughing like crazy here. So the difficult part is you have to first tell yourself, man, I didn't really know it all. I don't know what to do. And you have to almost admit to yourself that what we thought recruiting was wasn't recruiting. So that's really been the big hurdle. But departments are coming around. I talked to him just last week because he was talking to a lot of larger agencies. And he talked to them. They went off, did something else, usually with marketing companies that are all about marketing, right, which is web clicks and stuff like that. And he says they're coming back to him. Like, okay, that didn't work. What do you have for us? So people are starting to realize it. But if you really want to correct recruiting, you'll ignore DLJ. You'll stop this crap with lowering standards. That's going to create the problems in your agency that gives the DLJ the opportunity to come back later and go, see, we need to now fix you and we need to help you and all this nonsense. So, man, I'm sorry about that. A lot of coughing today. But you get the what I'm trying to say. So keep that in mind. I'm going to go ahead and cut this off because I am coughing a storm up here with allergies going on here in Oklahoma. But it can be fixed, folks. But it's not going to be fixed by the DLJ. It's not going to be fixed by your fancy website. It's not going to be fixed by, you know, a billboard or the things that we always used to do, because that worked back in the past because we had plenty of candidates. We had to turn people away. We have to actually recruit. I filmed a series of training videos for Safeguard because I believed in them so much. In fact, what happened was is this guy came to one of my leadership seminars. I started talking about this recruiting thing, and he was like, man, I think I want to do that. I think I want to do exactly what you said. And he went out, and he converted a lot of what he was doing in the trucking industry, which was working, and he launched this, and it's been amazing. It's the answer. They're not sponsoring this or anything. I'm just telling you right now, it's the answer. But so many folks see this, and they don't want to believe it because they just want to throw their hands up and say, it's nothing we can do about it. Well, the DLJ cracks me up because they're not going to help you. In fact, they're trying to destroy you. And all you got to do is follow the money to understand why. The ICP gets the majority of their funding from the Department of Justice. So they're going to tout this like it's golden, right? Most of your major cities are getting grant funding from the DLJ, so they're going to get right behind it. That's very dangerous to do. And so we need to recognize this, and we just need to lead. Lead our departments well, and everything else is going to take care of itself. That drives me insane that we don't have this ideology. Let's just lead well. People want to work in places that have great leadership. That's the answer. We need to stop right there and ignore everything else. Until next time, just remember, lead on and stay courageous.
Thank you for listening to Courageous Leadership with Travis Yates. We invite you to join other courageous leaders at travisyates.org.